Good morning, I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're all poorer than we were 8 years ago. That's what the latest Federal Reserve Board survey of consumer finances found. The survey is an every 3 years look at the balance sheets of American families. Not much surprise there. But deeper in the report is an even more troubling statistic. The gap between the wealth of white families and African-American families is widening. The wealth, savings, investments, income, and debts of the typical African-American family is just 10% that of the typical white family. Put another way, for every dollar a white family holds, an African-American family has one thin dime. With us to sort out these numbers and to discuss some policy attempts to close the wealth gap are Thomas Shapiro, professor of law and social policy at Brandeis University, and Algernon Austin, director of the Project on Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy at the Economic Policy Institute. Dr. Shapiro, Dr. Austin, welcome to WNYC.
Well, great, Amy. Thanks for having
us this morning.
Dr. Austin, I'll start with you. What does this mean, wealth gap? Is it that African Americans get paid less?
No, it's important to distinguish wealth and income. One way to think about it is income is how much you earn, you know, your sort of weekly or monthly paycheck. But if you were to lose your job, wealth would be everything that you have remaining. So your savings, your home, your car, stocks, bonds, the resources that you would turn to help you survive if you lost a job. And for African Americans right now, large numbers of them are actually losing their jobs.
Well, but isn't there a corollary between income and wealth? If you make more money, you have more money to invest in assets like a car, like a house, like stocks?
Yes, that's generally correct. But, you know, it's also important to keep in mind your expenses and your debts. So if you make $1 million, but you owe someone but you spend $2 million, you're worse off at the end of the day. But yes, generally speaking, the more income you make, the more you can save and the more that you can invest. So that's generally true.
But this hints that there's something more than African Americans not making as much as white people that is at work with regard to the wealth gap. Dr. Shapiro, can you explain that for me? What else is operating here?
Well, that's a very important question. When you look at the average wage of the average white and black workers, you see that gap is about 60 cents on the dollar. And as you started at the top of the hour, the wealth gap is about a dime on the dollar. So we start with the notion that that income gaps between whites and blacks and Hispanics or Asians is, in fact, very important to contributing to that dime on the dollar wealth gap. However, there's a lot more involved. For example, when we look at national evidence where you look at whites and blacks in the same earning group, one might suspect that then their wealth profiles would be almost at parity. Well, in fact, what you see is that whites and blacks in the same income ranges, that wealth gap does in fact close from a dime on the dollar to 25 cents or a quarter on a dollar. But that still leaves unresolved how do, among whites and blacks of equal accomplishment and merit in that case, how do you get that 75% differential? So while the employment sector is in fact really critical and maybe the most critical part here, we also, I think, have to look at a legacy of race in the United States and how that has come forward in the past, as well as continuing discrimination in institutional areas, most importantly, housing.
Dr. Algernon, why is there such a yawning gap, and why did it grow between 2004 and 2007? I would think that over time, as we get further and further away from the ingrained racism that some of the civil rights laws in the 60s were trying to help us break. More blacks get educated, more blacks get better jobs. One would think that generationally, Black families would improve or would be improving over time, but we actually saw a decline between 2004 and 2007. Does intergenerational transfer of wealth play into this? What's at work here?
One thing, the studies looking at intergenerational economic mobility shows that blacks are more downwardly mobile over intergenerationally than whites. So,
really? Why is that?
We are in a sort of post-Jim Crow, post-civil rights era, but there remains, everyone who's tried to measure or assess discrimination in the labor market finds it. We have audit studies in many major cities showing discrimination in the labor market. If you look at unemployment rates within cities of individuals of the same education level, you see large gaps regardless of the education level. So, in fact, discrimination remains a problem. And how it relates to wealth specifically is when you think of subprime lending, the research shows that, again, controlling for income, controlling for credit scores, blacks and Hispanics were much more likely to have subprime loans. So they're much more likely to be paying much higher interest. And there are also other types of lending, lending instruments that charge high interest rates that are targeted to minority communities. All of these things sort of suck wealth out of black and Hispanic communities. Specifically relating to housing, between 2004 and 2007, the home ownership rate for blacks dropped 1.9%.
This during that huge housing, the run-up with the housing bubble.
Yes, yes. No, this is the housing bust.
Ah.
This is the beginning of the housing bust that I'm documenting here. So it dropped about 2% for whites, the home ownership rate. I mean, for blacks, but about 1% for whites. So this is a big factor in wealth because for most households, their home is their major source of wealth. So the fact that we're seeing a faster decline in home ownership among blacks would help explain the worsening wealth disparity.
So you're saying between 2004 and 2007, the housing bust, was beginning to be seen in the African American and Hispanic communities, but we really didn't start. It didn't appear on people's radar, the media's radar, until it started happening to white families.
No. I'm saying no. It started happening across the board. But I was saying that black families lost roughly 2 percentage points in terms of home ownership rates, but white families, these are white families, lost 1 percentage point. So that would increase the disparity in the home ownership rate, and consequently likely increase the disparity in the wealth gap.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with Algernon Austin, director of the Project on Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy at the Economic Policy Institute, and Thomas Shapiro, professor of law and social policy at Brandeis University, about a recent report showing a widening wealth gap between African-American families and white families. Dr. Shapiro, if home ownership is the single largest contributor to wealth, it would follow that getting more people of color in their own homes would shrink this gap, but allowing more low-income people of color to own their own homes doesn't seem like a popular idea right now. Conservatives, for one, blame the housing market collapse and foreclosure crisis to a 1992 law requiring Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to make loans to people who couldn't afford them, or that's the way it was framed. We can argue whether that's the case, but isn't relaxing lending standards a practice that got us into this mess in the first place?
No. Very, very simply, I think let me go back a step or two. I think it is important to address briefly the frame that you threw out on the housing collapse.
Mm-hmm.
It is now well documented that institutions making loans under the Community Reinvestment Act have a far lower rate of subprime lending and subsequent delinquencies and foreclosures than banking institutions not within the purview of the Community Reinvestment Act. That is, where government regulations that have been on the books for 15 years or so and longer in some instances were actually enforced, those communities receiving those loans and those individual families have a much lower probability of being caught up in the housing crisis. So I think it's important to start there, and that data is irregardless of creditworthiness. We see situations, well, the data is also abundantly clear, that among whites and blacks of, say, of in the highest FICO scores, the highest creditworthiness scores, African-American and Hispanic families, having the same credit scores as whites in those categories, receive 2 to 3 times as many subprime and potentially pernicious kinds of loans that put people in trouble.
Now, but steering this back to the wealth gap, what are some and housing being a primary way that people accumulate wealth? It seems that the argument would be, in order to decrease the wealth gap between African-American families and white families, more African-Americans need to own their own homes and be able to pass those homes or the income generated from the sale of their homes upon people's deaths to the next generation and to accrue wealth that way. So if we take off the table more subprime mortgage loans for everybody, what mechanisms would you suggest should be put in place to create more home ownership for African American and Hispanic families?
Well, I would start with on the stabilization side of that spectrum. I think immediately it is quite urgent to think about government policy around the reworking of current mortgages that families received, especially within the last 5 to 7 years, and to ensure as best we can that those kinds of reworkings are targeted at the communities that are being the most severely impacted at the moment, and those are low to moderate income communities, especially communities of color. Now, I think that's that kind of stabilization is an urgent matter to start from. Working out from that base after things have become a little more stabilized, I do think that home ownership will continue to be the most important wealth-generating avenue for American families. But we're clearly going to need to learn lessons from what the banking institutions have been able to do and the way regulators and government had not responded until relatively recently and be a lot more careful. I think the housing advocates need to be more careful. I think all of us who are concerned about racial equality in the United States and democracy need to be much more concerned and much more careful about that. But I still think that moving forward on a more stable basis, home ownership will continue to be a primary avenue for wealth generation in the United States.
Dr. Austin, as ever when we talk about race, are we really talking about class? What if you looked at it from an income level? What percentage of people making $35,000 to $45,000 a year own their own homes? I know just personally that my wealth gap was huge as a single woman, and it took marrying a white man to get my wealth to close my wealth gap. I had thousands of dollars in outstanding college loans. I was working a pink-collar job as a secretary in a law firm. I had lots of credit card debt, and were I to proceed on that path, there was just no way out. There was no way out. So to what extent is this also more of a class discussion than a – why is this framed as a race discussion and not a class discussion?
Well, it's both, and it's really important to –
Or a gender issue.
Yeah, it's really important to look at all of those issues. And one way that I come at it is, you know, probably some of the debts that you had, we should have policies to see that you don't developed them. So college, the administration has tried to increase the amount of Pell Grants. So the amount of debt that sort of low-income students should accrue as a means of going to, after going to college should be lower or ideally zero. The interest rates on our credit cards and other things should be significantly lower. I'm sure that
these are all solutions that you're arguing as public policy should be taken up by Congress.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Yes. So these things are important. There's also, we've talked about a wage disparity in black-white, but there's also a gender disparity in earnings, so I think that's important. But let me go back to the issue of race also. There really needs to be much more attention given to the high unemployment rate among blacks, for example. It's been roughly twice the white rate since 1968. We've made very little progress on that front. Right now, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has a backlog of 74,000 cases, and there's been declines in staffing. So we've really sort of dropped the ball on sort of moving forward in terms of confronting sort of racial discrimination in the labor market. But I also think that there's a lot more to be done in terms of addressing the wealth disparities in this country. Compared to Germany, for example, the U.S. has a much higher rate of low-wage workers, so we have to increase the minimum wage. Yet our CEOs make a lot more than German CEOs. So by addressing the issue of jobs and wages, people will have more income, they'll be able to pay off their debts, they'll be able to save more, and after saving over time, they will be able to purchase that home.
Commenters are replying on our website that they want to know where they can get more information about this. Thomas Shapiro, any suggestions?
Yes, several. One of the better, I think, clearinghouses now is run by an organization called Insight. And I actually think it's probably Insight. It is insight.org. Has a clearinghouse of information and data on closing the racial wealth gap, as well as a great index of experts of color. If people want to branch out and dig down deeper into some of the documentation that exists out there.
We will put a link to insight.org on our website, wnyc.org. And briefly from Dr. Austin, I'll close with you. Do you know of any plans afoot in Congress now to deal with this by the Obama administration? Is there anything in the economic stimulus bill, for example, to try and address the wealth gap?
In the stimulus bill, I'm not aware of anything, but I know that he does have a home ownership plans that should provide some relief to distressed homeowners. Yes, I don't know if Professor Shapiro would want to add anything on that.
I would just briefly in that, President Obama has been talking, rightly so, about finding and creating a new foundation of the American economy, and the government is helping with that through the Economic Recovery Act, incredibly so. What I think we need to watch carefully is the kinds of industries and the segments of the industries that's being promoted through the Economic Recovery Act, and who is employed in those industries, and where the subcontracts and the small businesses within those that get the subcontracts.
Right. Is there any provision to steer, say, all of this construction, transportation and infrastructure stimulus to minority-owned construction companies?
Go ahead.
Oh, there is a suggestion. There was a memo coming out of the White House, you know, sort of encouraging community benefits agreements and other policies that would allow the dollars to reach sort of disadvantaged communities and populations. But it's really only a suggestion. It's not anything much stronger than that.
Thomas Shapiro, professor of law and social policy at Brandeis University, and Algernon Austin, who was just speaking from the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
And again, the conversation continues online at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. And again, we will post a link to insight.org for those of you who want more information about the growing wealth gap between African-American families and white families and some proposals to address that issue. Coming up, Nets fans, The Rock versus the Izod Center. Where do you want to see this basketball team play? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC, or do you not care and you want the Nets to move to Brooklyn? Let us know. This is Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.